Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotloff, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 3 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered low testosterone by age, what's normal at 20, 30, 40, 50, and beyond. Today we're getting into low testosterone in young men. Why is it rising? In the last episode, the big idea was that testosterone changes with age, but normal for age is not the same thing as healthy, and it's definitely not the same thing as symptom-free. A lot of men hear one lab number, get told they're fine, and the conversation ends there. That's usually where the confusion starts. What matters in real life is not whether some online thread says young men are all crashing hormonally, or whether an older doctor shrugs and says, "You're too young for this." What matters is whether there is a real trend, why it might be happening, and how to think about it without turning your brain into soup. Because if younger men really are running into low testosterone more often, that changes how you test, how early you look, and how careful you need to be before anyone throws treatment at the problem. The first thing to say is that low testosterone is common enough to matter, but not so common that every tired guy with a stressful job has it. Published estimates for clinically documented symptomatic hypogonadism in men ages 40 to 79 are roughly 2.1% to 5.7%. New cases show up at around 11.7 to 12.3 per 1,000 men per year. Those are useful numbers, but they are almost certainly minimum estimates, not the full picture. Why minimum estimates? Because the diagnosis is intentionally strict. Male hypogonadism is a clinical syndrome. It requires persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence. A low number alone is not a diagnosis. Symptoms alone are not enough either. Research studies usually want repeated low morning testosterone levels, symptom confirmation, and some effort to rule out temporary suppression from illness or bad timing. That is good science. It also means a lot of real-world men never make it into the count. I see this constantly. A man in his early 30s comes in with low libido, fewer morning erections, brain fog, worse gym recovery, maybe 15 or 20 extra pounds since his late 20s. He had one testosterone test at 4 in the afternoon after sleeping 5 hours while fighting off a cold. Somebody says, "It's within range." No free testosterone measured accurately. No LH. No FSH, no repeat test. Then 6 months go by and he still feels off. That is not a completed evaluation. That is a half-finished thought. The proper workup is boring, which is one reason it gets skipped. Testosterone should be checked in the morning, ideally between 7 and 11. In symptomatic men, our decision-making often centers around total testosterone at 350 nanograms per deciliter and free testosterone at 100 picograms per milliliter. We prioritize free testosterone because it can uncover hidden deficiency that total testosterone misses, and we measure it directly with equilibrium dialysis and LCMS/MS, not with a guess. Just as important, LH and FSH have to be measured alongside testosterone. Without them, you cannot tell whether the testes are failing or whether the brain is under-signaling. And if you do not know that, you do not know what treatment makes sense. That point becomes more important when we talk about younger men, because the most common real-world pattern is not permanent damage. It is functional hypogonadism. In plain English, the system is intact, but it is being suppressed. Obesity, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, chronic inflammation, poor sleep, some medications, prior anabolic steroid use. These do not always destroy the axis. They lean on it until it stops performing well. The highest burden shows up in exactly the groups you'd expect once you start paying attention. Men with obesity, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, chronic lung disease, kidney disease, and cancer all have a much higher rate of low testosterone. That does not mean they were struck by 3 unrelated problems at random. These conditions often feed each other. A guy with significant visceral fat is a good example. Fat tissue is not passive storage. It is hormonally active. it increases inflammation, it increases aromatase activity, which increases estradiol signaling in men. That can suppress gonadotropin output from the brain, then testosterone drops. When testosterone drops, body composition usually gets worse, insulin sensitivity often gets worse, exercise tolerance falls, and the cycle tightens. Men sometimes think, I gained weight because my testosterone dropped, or my testosterone dropped because I gained weight. In practice, it's often both. Very annoying biology. Efficient, but annoying. Last month, I saw a man in his late 20s who had spent 2 years trying to out-train bad sleep and creeping insulin resistance. He was doing more pre-workout math than actual recovery. His total testosterone was not catastrophic, but his free testosterone was low, his symptoms were real, and his LH pattern suggested secondary suppression rather than testicular failure. That distinction matters, because a young man like that should not be pushed toward treatment that shuts down sperm production if his testes are still capable of responding. And that brings us to a mistake I see almost every week. People assume aging is the main engine of testosterone decline. It is not, at least not in the way most men imagine. Healthy aging causes a modest drop. In the European male aging study, total testosterone drifted down only about 0.4% per year in healthy men. Free testosterone fell faster, about 1.3% per year, but still gradually. Those are not the cliff-like drops that bring men into clinic saying, "I don't feel like myself anymore." When I was younger in training, I probably gave age too much credit. I was wrong. Age matters, of course, but the dramatic cases are usually driven by what accumulates with age, not age as some mysterious force. Weight gain, sleep loss, inactivity, diabetes, medication burden, chronic illness. If you keep the chassis in decent shape, the engine often ages more gracefully than people think. If the chassis is neglected, the dashboard lights come on earlier. Older data from the Massachusetts Male Aging Study made this pretty clear. Men with more illness and higher body weight had lower testosterone over time. There was also one odd signal. Smoking correlated with somewhat higher testosterone. That does not mean smoking is a health strategy. It means endocrine epidemiology is messy and human behavior is messy. If population data ever look too neat, be suspicious. Now, the reason younger men are part of this conversation is not just that we are finally noticing them. There is evidence that age-matched men from later birth cohorts have lower testosterone than men of the same age from earlier cohorts. That is the important comparison. Same age, different generation. A Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism paper from 2007 looked at American men across successive birth cohorts and found a population-level decline beyond simple aging. Translated into normal language, a 35-year-old man today may be landing on a lower testosterone distribution than a 35-year-old man from an earlier generation, even before obvious disease is diagnosed. That does not mean every younger guy is doomed. It means the entire bell curve may be shifting down a bit. And when the curve shifts, more men end up near symptomatic thresholds. There are parallel signals in male reproductive health too. The strongest pooled data on sperm counts suggest a substantial long-term decline in sperm concentration and total sperm count in men from North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand since the 1970s. Sperm count is not testosterone. Different marker, different biology. But it supports the broader idea that male reproductive health may be changing over time, not just our awareness of it. So why would this be happening earlier? The simplest answer is that the main drivers now start earlier in life. Young men are reaching adulthood with more metabolic risk, more obesity, more sedentary time, more ultra-processed food, more chronic sleep deprivation, more stress that gets treated like a personality trait instead of a physiologic problem. You can suppress your hormonal axis in your 20s without doing anything dramatic. You just have to be modern for long enough. Think about the average day for a lot of younger men. Wake up underslept, caffeine, sit for work, eat convenience food, train hard a few times a week but recover poorly. Scroll past fitness influencers who look chemically assembled. Sleep 5 or 6 hours. Repeat. The body does not care that your smartwatch says high performance. it cares what signals it gets. And if the signals say inflammation, sleep debt, insulin resistance, and chronic stress, testosterone often follows. Medication exposure is part of the story too. I ask about this every day because the answer changes management all the time. Opioids can suppress the axis. Glucocorticoids can do it. SSRIs can worsen sexual symptoms and sometimes complicate the picture. Finasteride belongs in the conversation. Prior anabolic steroid or testosterone use is a big one, especially in young men who were told they were just doing one cycle. The body rarely interprets that as a temporary social experiment. Environmental exposures are harder to prove at the level of one individual, but they are credible at the population level. Endocrine-disrupting chemicals like BPA, phthalates, and PFAs are not science fiction. The challenge is that I cannot look at one guy and say, "Your testosterone is low because of that receipt you touched in 2019. Biology is not that generous. What we can say is that widespread exposure beginning early in life is a reasonable concern, especially when it lines up with broader reproductive trends. At the same time, more young men are getting tested now than they were 15 or 20 years ago. That matters a lot. Awareness is higher. Symptoms are discussed more openly. Men are more willing to ask why their libido disappeared at 29, or why they are recovering like a man twice their age. Some of the apparent rise is absolutely detection. If you look more often, you find more cases. This is not controversial, but detection alone does not explain everything. The cohort data suggest a real generational shift. The metabolic burden clearly starts earlier. Medication exposure starts earlier. Reproductive health signals are not moving in a comforting direction. The honest answer is that both things are happening at once. We are finding more cases, and there may also be more cases to find. Another reason prevalence is probably underestimated is underdiagnosis. Klinefelter syndrome is a classic example. It affects roughly 1 in 500 to 1,000 men, yet more than half of affected men are never diagnosed. If a common genetic cause of primary hypogonadism can hide that easily, you should not assume the rest of the low testosterone landscape is being captured perfectly. There is also a pattern recognition problem in routine care. A man reports lower libido, weaker erections, less morning erection quality, more abdominal fat, fatigue, and lower exercise tolerance. Instead of seeing one endocrine picture, the system often sees five unrelated complaints. He gets sleep advice from one place, an antidepressant discussion from another, a diet handout from somewhere else, and no proper hormone workup at all. That happens more than people realize. Acute illness muddies the waters too. We saw that clearly during COVID. Testosterone can fall during serious illness, which means a low level drawn in the middle of an infection is not enough to diagnose chronic hypogonadism. You retest in recovery. Medicine would be easier if the body cooperated with our categories. It usually doesn't. This is also where last episode connects directly to next episode. Last time we talked about age and lab ranges. Today we're talking about why younger men may be showing up more often. Next time, we get to the decision point that changes treatment completely, primary versus secondary hypogonadism. High LH with low testosterone suggests primary hypogonadism, meaning the testes are not responding well. Low or normal LH with low testosterone suggests secondary hypogonadism, meaning the brain is under-signaling. In young men, that distinction is everything. If LH is below 8 and the pattern is secondary or functional and clemifin is usually the first place we look, it works by blocking estrogen receptors at the hypothalamus, which increases GnRH and LH, and that tells the testes to make testosterone naturally. It preserves spermatogenesis and testicular function, which is a very big deal in younger men. TRT has a role, but it is reserved for primary hypogonadism or secondary cases that do not respond. It suppresses gonadotropins and sperm production, so it is not something to hand out casually because a 27-year-old is tired and annoyed. A lot of guys hear all this and think, "Fine, but what are people getting wrong?" A few things, repeatedly. First, I'm too young to have low testosterone. No, you are too young to assume age protects you from biology. I have seen men in their 20s and 30s with clear, symptomatic hypogonadism. Usually, there is a reason. Obesity, sleep apnea, prior steroid use, medication burden, metabolic dysfunction. Sometimes a genetic issue. Youth does not cancel those. Second, one low testosterone number proves it. It does not. You need persistent symptoms, repeated morning testing, and the rest of the panel. Testosterone, free testosterone, measured accurately, LH and FSH at a minimum. Without classification, you are guessing. Third, my total testosterone was normal, so hormones are not the problem. Maybe, maybe not. Free testosterone can be low even when total testosterone sits in a broad reference range. That is why we prioritize direct measurement of free testosterone. I cannot tell you how many men were told you're normal based on a total testosterone number that looked fine on paper while the rest of the picture was quietly making the diagnosis. Fourth, if I feel bad, I should just start testosterone. Especially in younger men, that can be the wrong move. If the problem is secondary and the testes can still respond, shutting down the axis with TRT may create fertility problems and testicular suppression you did not need. The treatment has to match the physiology. Otherwise, you are fixing the dashboard light by removing the bulb. Fifth, I'll just lose weight and everything will sort itself out. Lifestyle absolutely matters. It is foundational. But in the real world, the testosterone increase from lifestyle change alone is often modest, and a lot of lost weight comes back within a few years. Men do better when lifestyle work is paired with an actual diagnostic plan and, when appropriate, treatment that supports the axis instead of replacing it. So, what should you actually do with all this? First, if symptoms are persistent, get tested correctly. Morning draw, repeat if low. Measure total testosterone with LCMS/MS. Measure free testosterone directly with equilibrium dialysis and LCMS/MS. Add LH and FSH every time. Without LH and FSH, you are missing the fork in the road. Second, look for drivers early. Weight gain, sleep apnea, insulin resistance, diabetes risk, medication effects, prior steroid use, chronic stress, poor sleep. These are not side details. In younger men, they are often the story. Third, do not rush into treatment that shuts down fertility unless you actually need it. If the pattern is secondary or functional and LH is below 8, enclomiphene often makes much more physiologic sense than TRT. It works with the body's signaling instead of taking over for it. Fourth, monitor like an adult, not like a hobbyist. After treatment starts, labs should be checked after the first month, then every 6 months. That usually includes testosterone, free testosterone, LH, FSH, estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, and other clinically indicated markers. PSA matters once you are age appropriate. Insulin matters when body composition is part of the picture. One test and a pep talk is not follow-up. At Viedma, this is what we do all day. We either order a thorough panel nationwide or review outside labs that men upload, including results from other testing services. The medical team builds individualized plans based on actual physiology. Enclomiphene is first line when the pattern fits. If erection or urinary symptoms are part of the picture, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet can make sense. The point is not to chase a bigger number. The point is to diagnose the syndrome correctly and treat the man in front of you. Next time, we'll get into primary vs secondary hypogonadism, where the problem starts and why it changes everything. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to Viedma for free or order labs through our special offer at viedma.com.